One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So, Matt, for my New Year's resolution this year, I thought about dropping bad habits.
Yeah.
But then I realized nobody likes a quitter, so we're not doing that.
It's good.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing all right.
Good. Good.
I'm ready for this hustle and bustle of the holiday season to be done.
Yeah. It's almost there.
I love it. It has taken me a little bit longer this year to get into the Christmas spirit, but man, I am worn out.
I know. And just so everybody knows, this is being recorded a little bit before it drops, just so we can take our holiday breaks. So yeah. You're hearing this after New Year's, but we're recording this right around the Christmas time. So just if you're like, wait a minute, we're already over it.
Technically, what the hell are you talking about?
Technically, Matt and I are still in 2024 while you're in 2025. Mm-hmm. So there's a weird, like we talked about last time, I think, we live in this weird time warp.
My other car is a TARDIS.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a joke, but I'm not going to say it on this. I'll save that for SideQuest.
All the Doctor Who fans just applauded in their car.
In their TARDIS. Yeah. But before we get into it, we'll say go check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. You can find a list of shows that we're happy to be associated with, and you can find some tips and tricks on podcasting if you're into such things. Also, while you're online doing your, you know, returns on the gifts that you got from people that you don't really want, and you're like, how do I return this? Take a minute, go over and buy you something from one of our sponsors. You can find the links and the vanity codes in our show notes. Just go there, click on the link. I've hyperlinked them. You can go straight to the website with our code, get you something from our sponsors. You'll help out the show. Plus you'll get some cool stuff, because Matt and I don't advertise for things we don't believe in.
Exactly.
If we advertise it, it's because we've tried it and we liked it and we think that y'all will like it. So Matt and I, we're not slaves to the money. So we're not just going to take an ad if we don't like it. So you can promise that if you hear us talk about it, we like it and we think that you will like it. So go check it out. Also, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. You can sign up to become a patron. You can pick your level. All levels, 1, 5, and 10, get a bonus episode a week. $5 and $10, they get the video version of that episode. They also get the audio and video ad-free versions if we have an ad. So if you're like, yeah, I know you love the things that you're doing ads for, but I don't want to hear you talk about it. Okay, that's fine. Go over to Patreon, sign up for $5 or $10 level, and you can get the ad-free version of that. And you can get the audio in your podcatcher if you copy the RSS feed. Mm-hmm. Also, our $10 a month, they get our second show, Side Quest, that Matt and I love doing. It's a deviation from Graveyard Tales, nothing like Graveyard Tales. It's me and Matt talking about whatever the heck we want to talk about. So sometimes you get, you know, dives into our personal lives, like when I almost got attacked by a Cooper's hawk. You get that. You get, you know, if we went on vacation and did something cool, you get that. Sometimes it's just us BSing for an hour.
Yeah. But yeah, we do quizzes, we do reaction videos.
Mm-hmm.
We most recently had a taste testing video. That was blast. And yep. I think we're going to do more of those down the line. So it's a lot of fun. Go check it out.
And you can get in there before we do the gross taste test that I have planned. I'm working on one to try to make me and Matt gag.
He's going to make me eat a bug.
I am. And, you know, you can't do that on YouTube anymore, but guess what? This is not on YouTube. This is on Patreon. So we can gag. We can vomit if we wanted to. So take that, YouTube.
We won't show that.
We might. Depends. Depends on how bad y'all want to see it. I may do a blooper reel of just vomiting. But yeah, go over there, patreon.com/graveyardtales. Sign up to become a patron. Yeah, probably. but that's all I got for housekeeping. So Matt, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Okay, so we're going to continue our listener stories episode. Once again, we got so many stories, we couldn't get through them all. And so we didn't want to rush or make a 3-hour show. So this is part two of our listener stories. And what we're doing is we're celebrating the Victorian tradition of telling ghost stories or scary stories around the fire. Mm-hmm. At this time of year. And the reason is it's the winter solstice. It's cold. It's dark. People begin to start thinking about these things. We've had the thinning of the veil and all of that stuff. And it culminates here right at the end of the year when we start thinking about the end of things.
Right.
All of that stuff plays into this tradition. And so we're bringing it back and you guys are helping.
Yep.
All right. So our first one tonight comes to us from MG. We live in the borough of Westchester, Pennsylvania, which has plenty of Revolutionary and Civil War history. Our house was built in 1850 and our neighboring buildings down the block have significant history. I love ghost stories as much as the next junkie, but I'm a skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
However, all of us had some kind of experience in our house. I've heard people talking in a room where no one was in when putting Finn down. I guess Finn is their child. I don't know. I've heard boys and girls named Finn, so I don't know. I've heard my name called very faintly from downstairs, and my wife said, nope, I never said anything.
That's weird.
We have felt a presence in the downstairs at night when one of us sleeps on the couch. He says, due to my snoring. But then he throws his wife under the bus and says, but his wife is just as guilty. We both snore, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I have Ashley fall asleep before I do, and so she doesn't catch it as much. She says, you snore.
Yeah.
But not to derail it, but just saying.
Yeah. Needless to say, there is some activity that could actually be chalked up to being a twin with neighbors and thin walls. The experience, however, is a bit different. As mentioned before, this particular night, I was on the road in Southern Virginia Beach area for work. My wife was home with Finn, who at the time had trouble sleeping, and our daughter Georgia, who was 4 at the time. In my hotel room, I didn't arrive till late at night and showed up to the room and just crashed. It was a chain hotel with no known haunted activity. However, I started to dream something I will never forget. I dreamt that my room was controlled by a very evil witch that would hold seances in the area that the bed was in.
Hmm.
I was warned in my dream by past ghosts to get out of the room because she was including me in her seance. The dream felt like it lasted for hours. It felt so real, like I was present but still dreaming. I woke up in a panic around 3:30 a.m. and felt an immense, heavy, evil presence immediately. I felt like I was being watched by this witch and the ghosts as well. I got up, turned on the lights, turned my computer on, and waited till I felt this presence leave. I finally went back to sleep with unease until I had to get up for work. On the way to work, I always call my wife and check in on her and the kids and see what chaos I might have missed the night before. To my surprise, my wife told me the activities that happened the night before, which included Georgia sleeping in our room because we're pushovers when I'm not home, and Finn, per usual, woke up around 3 a.m. Nothing crazy. This was kind of the routine. However, Georgia was with my wife, and because Finn had woke up and joined in as well, my wife had to go put Finn back down. All three were in the room, and Georgia said, "I didn't know Daddy was home."
Mm.
My wife said, "No, Daddy is in Virginia for work, remember?" And Georgia said, "No, I can hear Daddy walking upstairs." My wife shushed Finn, who was fussing a little, and there was no mistake that she could hear the steps creaking. Says it's an old house, old steps.
It's creepy.
She heard the footsteps going up the second and towards the third floor. She froze and said to Georgia, "It's just the house settling in the wind." And the footsteps stopped. The both of us have never felt or heard a presence so real in the wee hours of 3 a.m. from different areas at the same time. Says, has anybody else experienced this?
That's wild.
I can't say I've experienced that. But I do find it interesting in this story that from this dream, he wakes up around 3:30. And what we know is, you know, everybody thinks midnight is the scary time.
Mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
3 a.m. is actually the witching hour.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that is, if you wake up around 3 a.m., there's always that legend that, you know, something's going on. A spirit is around you or something, and that's why you're awake. I don't know. I usually wake up around 3:30 to go to the bathroom anyway.
Yeah, me too.
So the spirits in my room have to pee, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Because so do I.
I just feel bad for the spirits in my room that had to watch me do that.
But one thing, because when I was in college, I did a research project on dreams, and mainly it was like what dreams mean.
Mm-hmm.
But getting into that, I learned something that you dream right as you're coming out of that REM sleep, not when you're in the deep, deep part. Okay. And most of the time, dreams only last, you know, a few seconds to a few minutes. And even though they feel like they last for hours, I'm thinking that is so crazy because I remember dreams that like he said, they seemed really long. Like I'd been dreaming the same thing all night.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really not that way, at least according to the research.
Yeah.
So if you consider that, and you consider that he woke up at 3:30, the dream about this witch and the seance is occurring right at the witching hour.
Right. Yeah.
Which is, you know, pretty interesting. And I don't know about you, Adam. I tend to dream less when I am on the road mm-hmm. than I do at home, because I don't sleep as well.
Right.
When yeah. I'm away from my own bed.
Yeah.
But I have been traveling and been just completely exhausted when I got into a hotel room and just completely went down. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't usually remember my dreams.
I don't either. I forget them about 10 minutes after I wake up.
I mean, there are a few that I do remember, but it's usually because of something that was, you know, really, really frightening or really bizarre, and it mm-hmm. sticks with me. But I don't know. That's a crazy story.
Yeah, it is. A real quick anecdote on dreams, just because we're on the subject and I don't know where else to stick it in. I heard this recently, and if you look at old writings from old, like, philosophers and stuff, they discuss dreams and how vivid colors are mm-hmm. in dreams. And, you know, the blue was bluer than blue and all this stuff. Well, then if you move up several hundred years to the advent of black and white television, people who were alive during the start of black and white television, before it changed to color, they say their dreams are in black and white. And it wasn't until like the 80s or 90s that people born in those times started dreaming in color again. So they call it the black and white dream epidemic. And it's because you're, even now, people who are alive to see black and white television, even now, still dream mostly in black and white. And they're not entirely sure why, but they think it's something with just the TV is the closest thing to a dream.
Yeah.
You know, that we have, because it's two dimensional. It's not really happening. You're watching it like from an outsider. And so they think that caused a shift in people's subconscious to where they dream in black and white. And I thought that was interesting. So if you're listening, do you dream in color or black and white? And I want to know, were you alive to see black and white television or not? Just something curious, but
I know it's, well, I can remember having a black and white TV when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't because color wasn't available.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, we had a spare TV that was in a back bedroom, and it was black and white.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's kind of weird, you know?
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I thought it was weird, and I had to share it. All right. So the first story I've got for tonight is from CO, and they say, I really enjoy your show and just caught up with the back catalog just in time for the listener stories for Christmas. And I thought I would submit some things that happened to my mom and me at one of our properties that we lived on. First of all, thanks for the compliment. They say we used to live in an area that's called, Eudora down in Mississippi. It's south of Memphis and about 20 to maybe 30 minutes away from there. A really hilly, forested area that spreads out into the Delta and into farmland. We lived up in the hills on a property my grandmother owned. The first incident started with my mom. She said it happened at Christmas time in either 87 or 88. Mama was sitting on the couch smoking when movement around our Christmas tree caught her attention. And when she looked, she saw a little gremlin imp looking thing standing on top of one of the presents. When it saw that she noticed it, it ran off through the living room into the kitchen and in the direction of our back door. Now, a little bit of info on the property we owned. there's a small building we had put up that we called the cat house. It was called this because my grandmother was breeding cats at the time, and this was where they were kept. It was insulated and had electricity, so it had heating. It was eventually turned into a storage house, but at the time, it was still being used for the cats. My mom went out the next morning to go feed the cats. It had snowed sometime the night before, and she found a trail of sort of human-like tiny footprints that started at the back door, down the steps, and went across the backyard right up to the cat house. They continued up into one of the fenced-in areas in the front that the cats hung around to be outside all the way up to one of the cat doors, which was closed at the time. She also, around this same time, saw something run across the stovetop in the kitchen one day. She thinks that it might have been the same creature, but never saw it again after that. So now, the next two incidents that happened were things that I saw. When I was around 5 to 6 years old, maybe 7, I was sitting on my mom's bed and was looking out the bay window that was in her room. It was nighttime, and I was looking out into the yard toward our neighbor's property. Our properties were separated by a line of pines, and on our side of the tree line, we had a tall bush that sat out by itself in the side yard. That night, I saw 3, maybe 4 white glowing figures that were dragging a dark figure that was struggling. They walked up to the bush, and 2 to 3 of the white figures carried the dark one into the bush, followed by the last figure. They never came back out, and I sat around for a little longer to see if anything else would happen, but never did. So I left the room to tell my mom and grandmother what I saw. I have heard of 2 other similar incidents from other people. One of them was from a coworker at the time that I told this story to. He said he had a buddy that also lived in the Eudora area that saw the same thing on their farm, but also heard screaming when they saw it. So my best friend who lives in Coldwater, Mississippi, has had the same thing happen in her backyard as well. Not surprising, the land her family lives on is super haunted and is has a group of stories all on their own. The next incident happened when I was around 13, maybe 14 years old. It was summertime, and I came out of the house to go to the storage shed on the property that sat next to the cat house. It was the middle of the day, so it was very bright out. I saw a hand crawling across the ground in the space between them. And the end of the house, yeah, and the shed, not walking on its fingertips like Thing from the Addams Family, but dragging itself with its fingers. I stared at it a few seconds before looking away briefly, thinking, am I really seeing a hand crawl across the ground? Yeah, Matt's thing there. They say, when I looked back, it was gone. I ran over to the spot looking around, but couldn't find any trace of what I saw. These were the only things that happened to us on that property. Well, that's enough. If there were any others, me and my mom never saw them. And as far as we're aware, my grandmother and stepdad never saw anything either. Crazy thing is, both me and my mom thought there might be a body buried somewhere on our property. We don't have any proof of that, of course. It was just a creepy feeling we both had independently that we shared knowledge of years after we moved. So let me just say the imp gremlin type thing,
yeah,
that is fascinating to me.
Yep.
Because we've talked so much about forest spirits, the fae and different house entities like Dobie the house elf kind of thing. And that's what it seems like to me because of where they lived out in the woods on some land. I'm a firm believer that they probably had some type of forest spirit or house spirit. And I say spirit, it's more like the fae, some type of imp or elf or something like that, that they had. But I don't hear many stories like that. A lot of people don't tell those stories, especially in the U.S.
You're right. We don't hear them in the U.S. as much. And I think it's because the folklore is not here. If you sought it out and have, like you and I have done, then you begin to notice the things that you might have overlooked before. For example, I was telling him we were camping and we were walking up the trail, and it was not windy at all. And we're looking through the trees, and in a tree that's completely still, there is a single leaf that's going whoop, 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 whoop. You know, it's not blowing. It's just one leaf on a branch is just doing all this flippity flop. And I said, that is a fey trap.
Yep.
And she goes, what are you talking about? And I said, it draws your attention and you go over there to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that is how the fey would entrap you, is by bringing you close enough, you know, to touch it. And I said, you know, whenever you see that, whenever you see a single leaf on a plant that just seems to kind of be dancing along and there's no wind or anything, so that's a fey trap. And, mm-hmm. you know, you've seen those things your whole life if you've gone out in the woods or something. And you're just like, well, that's odd. But, you know, if you know the folklore, you know what it's called.
Right.
All right. Moving right along. This one comes from S. It was the only initial I had. And S writes, I wanted to share this story because my husband and I used to listen to you guys before he passed away. In 2006, he joined the Navy and attended boot camp and a school in the Great Lakes, Illinois. We lived in military housing there. We were there for 6 months, and when it was time to move to Dahlgren, Virginia, so that I could attend school, the Packers came to pack everything up. That night, we were sitting at the table arguing over something stupid. All of a sudden, his face started morphing into different faces. It was the weirdest thing, because they were translucent but changing. I was a bit shocked, and without saying anything, I went upstairs to bed. The next morning, I had to drop him off at the base, and I asked him if he wanted to hear something weird about the night before. Before I could mention anything, he said, did my face start morphing into other faces? I said, yes. And he told me that mine did the same thing.
Oh, wow.
After moving to Dahlgren, I ran into a neighbor who lived two doors down from me. And before I told her the story, she told me that the kids who lived behind us in another set of houses told her that she was lucky she didn't get the house that my husband and I lived in. They told her that when the house was vacant, they always saw a lot of kids' hands in the upstairs bedroom windows.
Yeah.
The windows were too high for kids to reach them to begin with, but the house was vacant. The neighbor that shared the wall where our stairs were didn't have kids and said they kept having to clean kids' handprints off of their stairwalls. I have always checked online throughout the years to see if anyone else had experienced paranormal activity in that housing, but never saw much other than hauntings on the recruit side of the naval base. Wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot going on. You know,
that just to comprehend all of that, like both of their faces changing during an argument.
I've heard of this, and I've seen videos of it, but I don't buy the videos I've seen.
Yeah,
it would be too easy to create that. But I've heard stories of this where it does always seem to be in an argument.
Yep.
You know, or one of the parties is angry and something about their face changes. I don't know. I mean, I guess a lot of people would begin to equate that with something like demonic possession. I don't know.
It could be, or it, if it's not possession per se, it's an entity taking advantage of the heightened emotion and, you know, not that the person is possessed, but it's like projecting a picture on the outside of their face. So their face isn't actually changing, but you're seeing it change because they're in front of the face. So, right. I think a lot of it has to do with the heightened emotions during an argument.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's not necessarily that, oh, you got possessed, which is what made you argue, but there's something in the house, in the room, that's taking advantage of that and messing with you.
So maybe something like a trickster entity.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, so I would be curious, if you guys had noticed other weird things that may have irritated you or caused you to become irritated to the other one. For example, something of yours going missing and you immediately thinking, I wish my husband would put this back, or I wish he wouldn't borrow this. Just simple little things, but something to cause you to become irritated. Something that could potentially lead to an argument over nothing. As you said, that argument that night was over something stupid. I would be curious to know if you recall anything like that happening and then not equating it to paranormal activity.
Mm-hmm. So,
that's really, really, really wild. Thank you for sharing that.
All right. So the next one I've got is from EW. So they say, I used to live at a haunted museum. Yes, for real. It was a historic house.
Number one, lived at a museum.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool.
And then to live in a haunted museum.
Right, right. And no, this is not old Zach Bagels. This is, when they say yes, for real. It was a historic house and farm in northern Maine. I was the curator, and since my home was too far away to make a daily drive, I lived there during my work week in the servants' quarters. I have plenty of stories about living in this mansion, such as the constant voices and breathing in the empty halls, and the previous director who passed away in the basement, which is where my bathroom was. I will only tell one, though, and I think it is by far the scariest. My room had electricity, but no lighting fixtures, meaning when the sun set, it got very, very dark. This particular night was a full moon. I had a skylight, and the light from the moon was shining into my room. I was laying on my bed, staring at the ceiling, when I saw a hand stretch out over my skylight from the outside. It cast a long shadow over my wall, and the hand curled and uncurled, almost like it was grasping at the window before retreating. This is when I like to specify that I lived on the third floor. I froze and then yelled at whatever that was to go away. Then I decided it would be best to roll over and go to sleep. I have no idea what the hand was, if it was some sort of spirit or physical creature clinging to my third story window. I don't think I'd like to ever find out, though. Yeah.
Yeah, me either.
the crazy thing to me is that it cast a shadow. So it was physical at that point. And so it either had to be a spirit or some cryptid type entity to be able to get up there to the third floor and to do that sort of thing.
Yeah. To have that physical manifestation that would, be strong enough to cast a shadow. That's not something you see every day.
Mm-mm. And they said they went right to sleep. I don't think I could go to sleep after that.
No.
I'd be moving rooms or something.
Yeah, getting away from that skylight. I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this one comes from BM. There is a story that my dad has told me several times from when he was a kid that also relates to an experience we both had years ago. Growing up, my dad lived in the backwoods of Maine. Here we are in Maine again. Maine.
Yeah, what's
must
up
be,
with Maine?
There's a lot of stuff going on in Maine. Maybe that's why Stephen King lives up there.
Yeah.
To call it remote would be an understatement. Many times they would go fishing on the lakes and spent a lot of their lives in the woods where they also worked logging. On one fishing trip, my dad, grandpa, and two other people had to hike over the nearest mountain to reach a good lake for fishing. On the first night, they decided to go out on a boat to see what they could catch. Not much exciting happened until all four people saw a light come up out of the middle of the lake, very slowly, and then rise up into the sky. The light, silent and with no other visible features, hovered in the sky for a few minutes before it sped off over the mountain and disappeared from sight. Needless to say, the fishing trip came to an abrupt end. They rode back to their camp and actually headed home that night.
Oh, wow.
The woods were always dangerous, like moose and bear and bobcats, but not as disturbing as what they saw. Fast forward about 40 years. My parents and grandparents lived next door to one another, my grandparents' home being at the top of our hilly driveway and us at the bottom. We had family visiting from out of town, and we were all up at my grandparents' for supper and a good gab session. My dad and I went back down to our house for some reason, and now I can't remember. As we walked back up the sidewalk between the two houses, something to our left caught our attention. Surrounding our houses to the left was an old pasture that then led up to the back parking lot of a nursing home that was situated about a city block away from my grandparents' house. In between the field and the nursing home, in the sky, was a bright orange ball of light. To me, it looked like a giant basketball hanging in the sky. The first thing I would have thought was that it was a light from the back parking lot. However, this was way taller than any light pole. There was no sound, no other lights, no flashing, just a solid, steady orange glow. Before we could even say to each other, "What is that?" the light moved upward faster than I have ever seen anything move, and it was gone. I have spent a lot of time outside at night, and I have never seen anything like that before or since. I am not a diehard believer in aliens as I am in the afterlife, but that was the strangest sighting.
Yeah, well, that's wild.
And you know, that more and more ufologists are buying into this theory that quote unquote aliens are actually underwater. Whether it's in the oceans or in these big lakes, and a remote lake would be an ideal spot.
Yep. Perfect spot.
And you know, if you lived out in the mountains and everything, seeing something like this, I mean, you know, you just have to think, you know, it's something you both saw it. And it doesn't sound like anything that you could reasonably explain. You wouldn't expect, you know, the military to be doing, you know,
right,
like testing on a on new aircraft or any of that stuff at night up in Maine near a nursing home, you know, right around, you know, residences. You know, there's plenty of places for them to get out of the way. You know, so you wouldn't do it where everybody could see it. That is a really cool story. I don't know what I would do if I experienced something like this. I've seen weird lights, but nothing so weird that I couldn't go, it's just a plane, it's a helicopter, it's whatever. I could actually go, that's not any of that. But
right,
you know, a big glowing giant basketball in the sky. Nope, that's not any of that.
Yeah, I've yet to experience anything that can be considered a UFO or anything. And my experiences stay in the paranormal realm.
Yeah, but you know, but Amanda and my dad have.
Yeah,
they saw something broad daylight at one of Brooks's baseball games, and they both saw it, and they both looked at one another like, Did you just see that?
Yep, that's wild. That's wild. All right, so this next one I got from SS is kind of a short one, but he says, I investigate the paranormal, and yes, I have had spooky encounters, but this story is to show that not all encounters are scary. I was an adult living at home, and this story is about the worst day of my life, the day my mom died at home, and I found her body at 8:30 p.m.
Oh.
Needless to say, it almost destroyed me. The next night, I was in bed at 8:30 p.m., and I heard three loud bangs. Bang, bang, bang. I didn't think much of it because my neighbor worked in his garage late, and I thought it was him, so no big deal. The next night, again, I heard three very loud bangs. I looked out the window. My neighbor's garage was dark, and it wasn't him. This went on for a few more nights. Bang, 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 all at the same time, 8:30 p.m. The next morning, I went to the room where I found my mom's body and told her how much I love her, miss her, and thanked her for all she did for me. I also said she's welcome to stay here if she wants, but if she had to move on, I'd be okay. The banging noises have stopped. In life, my mom had style, and had style even in death. She died on December 12th, 2012. Written out, it's 12-12-12.
Wow.
So, that's, I mean, I agree with their thinking that was, since it happened only after their mom's passing, and at the same time that they found her, I would tend to say, yeah, that probably was your mom just saying, hey, you know, this is all I can do right now, but I'm still here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm here for you.
Yeah, just letting them know.
And then when he said, no, you know, it's okay if you go on, then it stopped. And it reminds me, you know, when my grandmother passed last year, right after Thanksgiving, I made it a point to tell her, we will be okay. Everybody's going to be okay. You know, you go where you need to go. And, you know, just so there wasn't any other question, do I need to stay to help? I was like, no, you know, we're going to be fine, you know, and we're taken care of. We'll take care of everything. So maybe that's what their mom needed to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, that's a really great story though. You know, I don't know. A lot of people take comfort in feeling that they have a loved one that's still there looking after. I mean, we still experience things that we attribute to Amanda's grandfather. And, you know, I don't know. I think in some ways it gives her comfort. So.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. This one comes from AB.
not me or Ashley.
Yeah, no. This account is something my grandma told me happened to her, but the story has always stayed with me, so I figured I'd share it. The year was 1962, and my grandparents had rented a little house in central Michigan. They had just welcomed their fourth baby, and my grandfather was called away and would be gone for a few months. This was normal for my grandma because she was used to him being gone with the military. However, before he had left, they had gone around to yard sales and antique shops just to pass the time. As they entered a shop, she saw a very unique painting that drew her attention. She said she had never seen anything like it, and she wanted it. The shop owner wasn't asking for much, considering there was no artist name or date on the painting, so my grandpa bought it for her, like a going-away gift.
Hmm.
She went home and hung it up in the living room so she could admire it, and it would make a good conversation piece for her sisters to talk about when they came to visit in the future. She said that the painting was made of oil. It was darker themed with clouds and dark forests in the foreground. But in the background, up on a hill, was a black castle. It had a dark wooden frame, was oval in shape, and what really stood out to her was the glass. She said it was not clear. It had a dark purple hue to it, and it was rounded out, not like a normal flat glass frame. Hmm. This one had a 3D feel to the frame. She said nothing else was in the painting of significance, but nevertheless, she liked it for being unlike others. My grandfather ended up being shipped away, and my grandmother was on her own at the house with four kids.
Uh-huh.
She said he had been gone a few months when she had drifted off to sleep on the couch. She said she woke up not being able to breathe. She said her eyes popped open, and standing over her was a woman dressed in all black with her hands wrapped around my grandma's neck, hissing at her.
Oh, Lord.
I'm going to kill you and all your kids. My grandma said she went into fight mode and pushed the woman off her. She said the woman had long black hair and was older looking and could feel her hands kind of pushing through her black dress.
Mm.
She said this was all very vivid. She said she came back to her wits a few moments later and had sat up, grabbing her neck, thinking that that was just one realistic nightmare. She said her heart was drumming so loud she could hear the pounding in her ears. She said she took a deep breath, trying to recover from whatever had just happened, thinking she must be sleep deprived. When she looked over her shoulder to the left, she said there was the woman floating across the floor and went through the door. She said she just absorbed herself through it and was gone.
Hmm.
Needless to say, she was terrified and went through the house checking on the kids. They were fine. She turned on all the lights, grabbed the baby and her rocker, put all the kids in one room, and stayed up rocking him and watching her kids until daylight came. She said she didn't feel the house was haunted, but had a feeling it had something to do with that painting. So she removed the painting from the house, placing it outside in the garage. My grandpa heard her story after he came back home, and he took the painting back to the store he bought it from. The owner took it back, and it went back up for sale. She had no idea who bought it or if future owners had the same visitor, but she's always been leery about artwork ever since.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, you know, we've heard a lot of stories about objects that have attachments.
Yep.
You know, we've got a friend of the show who does paranormal investigations. He has told us stories about things like something in particular that his wife had gotten, an antique, brought it home, and things started to happen.
Yep.
So, I mean, this is not unheard of. And
you got to be careful buying other people's stuff.
Right. And it's the antique stuff, you know, something that might have been an heirloom. You've got to be cautious. But I have always felt that, especially with art, if you look at something and you feel something other than, you know, the typical, oh, I really like that, you know, that makes me feel good, or I really like the colors and all that stuff. When you look at something and you get a deep feeling when you look at it,
mm-hmm.
you know, that may be your first warning. Your first line of defense is that feeling that you're just like, oh, this really makes me feel a certain way. It may be time to pass on that, you know.
Yep, you know, I agree.
You know, especially something that you would find in an antique store or like an estate sale. You know, my mm-hmm. parents go to estate sales all the time.
My mom does too.
And the good thing about it is they go looking for certain things. You know, my dad picks up old tools, and he likes to collect clocks, although mom has cut him off, you know, no more clocks. She loves that uranium glass and, you know, the old dishes and things like that.
I need to set your mom up with my dad and stepmom's number, because they got a ton of uranium glass they need to sell.
Yeah, she loves it. So. And depression glass, I think, is what mom calls it. I don't know if that's the same thing, but whatever.
It's not. It's from the same time.
Yeah. But that uranium glass that will glow under UV light, it's pretty cool.
I've got a few pieces that my grandfather had that he gave me.
But I've told them both, be careful what you drag home from these estate sales.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know.
For sure.
You get something that's a little wonky, you may bring something home. I said, look, this house has got enough stuff going on in it as it is without you bringing new stuff here.
Yeah, don't add to it. All right, so this next one I got is from KK. And they say, happy holidays, Adam and Matt. As per my holiday tradition at this point, I have a tale for you about an experience that I recently had with the supernatural. And this year, it's going to get wild. So I'm going to jump in and say, I like that this has become their holiday tradition. Mm-hmm. And hopefully more people will find that it, as their holiday tradition, to send us stories and hear them on our show.
Right, yeah.
I love that.
I think it's great.
They continue with, let's hope that everyone has behaved themselves this holiday season, because I would hate to hear otherwise after what I saw last year on my way to work. I was on my way to work about 2 weeks before Christmas. I had an early shift and the sun was just peeking over the horizon as I reached a point on the highway where the road forked and the cars on my right side could branch off toward Ann Arbor, Michigan. On my way to Canton, I kept to the left and sipped my coffee as I tried to clear my head and focus on the work day ahead of me. This was a fork in the highway that merited focus. People can and will drive like monsters in this area. Aware of this, I had an eye on the closest vehicle to me as I approached the fork. This vehicle drew my attention because it was a beat-up, rusty white panel van, something that could have come out of a horror movie. The stereotypical murder van or kidnapper van. The sort of van you'd imagine the serial killer drives in the slasher films as they abduct victims and rack up a body count. I'm not sure what made me turn my head, aside from the proximity of this vehicle to my own, but something drew my attention, and I had to look. I jerked the wheel and very nearly collided with the car on my left. The face staring back at me from the rusty white panel van made my skin crawl. It could have come out of a horror movie itself. My first thought was that it was a Halloween mask, perhaps the Green Goblin from the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies. That is the closest that I can liken it to. At best, it was like Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin mask, except that it was not green. It was black with white trim. Mm. The pointed white teeth in the gaping smile were stark white, and the long black forked tongue hung down to the midpoint of this creature's chest. Long, curved, spiral black horns branched from its temples, scraping the ceiling of the van. Its wide gaping eyes were empty black holes with no pupils. It stared directly at me for a moment before jerking the wheel with its black hands tipped with jet black razor sharp talons at least a foot long. It seemed to understand that I had seen it and was eager to get away from it. I was shaking hard as I took the left exit and it took the right. Incredibly shaken, I went to a coworker that I knew would believe me once I arrived at work. I didn't even have to say anything as I burst into her classroom. "What on earth happened to you?" was her immediate question. She pointed out that I was shaking like a leaf and white as a ghost. I described to her what I had seen as I made my way to work. I said, "I know it sounds crazy, but I swear it's what I saw." My coworker turned my words around in her head for a long time before she finally said slowly, "It sounds like you saw Krampus." I couldn't even think how to respond. I was so dumbfounded. Yes, I believe in spirits, but I had never in my life had an encounter with something that was not a deceased human soul. I didn't know what to think. I went back to my own classroom with the promise to contemplate on what I had seen or thought I had seen, and talk with my friend after work. We met up after work when I had had some time to calm down. I had turned the experience over in my head, and I still didn't know what to make of it. I was 100% certain of what I had seen. I had done some online searching on my lunch break, and everything I could find led me back to the suggestion my coworker had made, Krampus. I did an extensive Google search based on what I had seen. The garish, terrifying, unforgettable face that I had seen just kept turning up Krampus. I asked why Krampus might be driving around in a beat-up old panel van instead of something more traditional for them, like a sleigh, and my coworker shrugged and said, "Maybe it's adapted to the times. I'll tell you one thing," she added as I took a long pause to contemplate on my experience. "I sure feel sorry for that kid." Ah!
Man. I don't know about the whole Krampus thing.
I don't know.
Krampus to me, I have heard about Krampus in the last 10 years. I don't recall hearing any stories about Krampus growing up, you know, not as a teenager or a young adult. It seems more modern to me. I don't know. Tell me I'm wrong.
I think for Americans that born in America from here, it is more modern because it's a legend, a tale from other countries going back centuries, but it didn't make it to the U.S. other than small pockets of immigrants a long time. Yeah. So it is more modern to us, you know, and then made popular by movies and stuff like that. But there has been the Krampus tale for centuries in other countries. So I don't know. I feel like, yes, like I believe you saw what you saw,
yeah,
but I don't know that I would say Krampus. I might say, yes, a demonic entity or something similar, because that's what Krampus looks like, is a demonic entity.
Yeah.
So maybe, yeah, maybe it was Krampus. I don't know. But I go for more demonic entity than Krampus, though they're kind of one and the same.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea of, you think, okay, he driving a van, you know, really?
Mm-hmm.
But, and I don't know if I have just put this theory together because of movies, but I like to believe that the research that I've done into demonic entities and exorcisms and things like that, that a demon can take on any form, shape that it wants.
Yep.
And it can reveal itself whenever and however to whomever it decides.
Mm-hmm.
So if this demon caught you unaware and decided, I'm going to show you my real appearance, or I'm going to show you an appearance that's absolutely going to scare the bejesus out of you, anybody else may see a regular person, a human,
mm-hmm.
driving a panel van and not think twice. But to you, it decided, I'm going to show you something. And
or if, because they said it almost acted like, oh crap, they can see me, and quickly pulled to the exit. Maybe this person can just see through the veneer.
That's a possibility too.
And the entity was like, oh no, they see me for who I really am. See through, you know, they're not fooled by the veneer
mm-hmm.
that the demons put on, where you or I would have been driving past and just went, look at that creepy old man in his mm-hmm. you know, kidnapping van. And they actually saw who it was. I don't know. I like that story.
Yeah, I do too. And again, I want you to know that I believe you. I believe you saw what you saw. You know, mm-hmm. we're just trying to help maybe make a little sense out of it. You know,
right.
We're not dismissing it. We're just trying to go, what could you possibly have seen? You know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this is my last one, for the night. This comes to us from DA. I have been affected by the paranormal since I was a small child. Therefore, I do not scare easily. However, an episode that took place during my stay at a particular hotel terrified me to my very core, and it's still haunting me years later. During Valentine's Day weekend of 2014, my boyfriend, now husband, booked a two-night stay at the historic Beaumont Hotel in Ouray, Colorado. I love old buildings and was very excited that I got to finally stay in the Beaumont, for I had been wanting to for years.
That's cool.
Upon arrival at the hotel, I immediately was hit with an uneasy feeling. But this was the same feeling I seemed to experience in almost every older building I walk into.
Hmm.
It's almost as if I can feel the history. The feeling does not bother me, but on the first night when I was trying to sleep, I found myself tossing and turning. My husband, at the time boyfriend, slept like a rock next to me, but I just felt uncomfortable. We all know that feeling of being watched, but I felt that the person watching me was so close to my face, I could almost feel them at my ear. I was burning up and sweating the entire night, And it wasn't until I turned in frustration to my left side in an attempt to get more comfortable that I saw a woman.
Mm.
She asked for my help and then disappeared. As I mentioned, I am no stranger to these type of oddities occurring around me. So I simply turned back to my right side, put the covers over my head, and finally drifted off to sleep. Now, aside from being a bit drowsy the next day, the events from my first night at the Beaumont were nothing too dramatic, in my opinion. Old buildings have ghosts. I understand that, and the woman I saw didn't make me feel threatened. The entity that I had a run-in with the next night, however, was a completely different story. Once again, my man and I were off to bed, and he slept soundly beside me, but I was restless as ever. Again, it was that feeling of someone watching me, but rather than just feeling uneasy, I was completely uncomfortable as it felt that this someone was breathing down my neck.
Yeesh.
I tried to ignore it for a couple of hours, but by the time the clock struck midnight, I was exhausted and I knew I needed some sleep. So I made the decision to take a relaxing bath to calm my nerves and make myself drowsy. I left my partner to sleep and drew myself a bath. As I lay in the tub, I still felt this presence, only it made me feel worse because I was naked and exposed. This is where things start to get extra strange. I remember telling myself that I needed to get out of the bathtub because I was very uncomfortable, but it was as if my mind and body were no longer connected. "Get out," I kept saying inside my head, but I didn't. Then I started to have what I can only describe as visions. One was of me drowning myself in the tub and feeling this ugly satisfaction at the thought that my boyfriend would be the one to find my body. The second was of blood, like smoke in the air, filtering its way through the bathwater from my wrists. Again, I felt even more satisfaction because of the mess my poor boyfriend would find and would make it that much more horrific for him. I even remember glancing and noticing my husband's razor sitting on the edge of the bathroom sink. It would be so easy for me to grab. These terrifying visions finally broke, and when I felt like I was somewhat present again, I noticed my bathwater was ice cold. I was able to pry myself away from the tub, not feeling peaceful and tired as I had hoped, but even more shook up and freezing cold.
Yep.
I looked at the time, and to my astonishment, the series of events that I felt took about 15 minutes actually took an hour and a half.
Wow.
It was now 1:30, and all I wanted to do was sleep. I wrapped myself in a bathrobe and decided to lay on the couch in our room in an attempt to sleep, so I did not disturb my still sleeping boyfriend in the bed. Now in a different location, I hoped and prayed that sleep would find me and the strange presence I felt in the bathroom would stay there and leave me alone. I was exhausted, but unfortunately, I felt it again, and this time, I felt physically ill. My stomach turned in knots as this thing once again was so close to me. It was as if I could feel its breath in my ear. This, of course, made my hair stand on end, but what really made a shiver go down my spine was when I felt the entity touch me. Over and over, it would prick, pinch, and poke at my legs, my face, my arms, any skin that was exposed outside the bathrobe. This was when I finally fell asleep during this physical attack. How I managed to fall asleep, I do not know. Maybe I was just that exhausted, or maybe it was brought on by this presence. I'm not sure. The next thing I knew, I was jolted out of my sleep an hour later by someone screaming. I never in my life heard a scream so sincere, so deafening, so horrifying. And unless I witness a murder itself, do not believe I ever will again. At least I hope I never will. It wasn't until I realized that I was looking at my poor boyfriend who, with wide eyes and hands up, was saying, "It's okay, it's okay, it's me, it's me," that I realized I was the one that was screaming.
Hmm.
I was sitting up and I had crawled so far in an attempt to get away from him that I was almost sitting on the back of the couch. Even though I was now fully awake, I was still terrified. I quivered uncontrollably and was hyperventilating. Once again, I felt something so close to me that I could feel its icy breath at my throat. I had to get out of there. We left the hotel around 2:30 a.m. because I was so horrified I could hardly breathe and felt myself going into a panic attack. Yet as soon as I crossed the threshold between the entrance of the hotel and the world outside, I felt better.
Hmm.
This experience was the most ghastly, hideous event that I have ever had in my life, and I continue to think about it even after I got home. I knew I had a horrifying nightmare while I was asleep on that couch, but I could not remember it. I feel that I cannot remember because I do not want to. It was too terrifying. I was scared to fall asleep for a week after because I did not want to experience the same dream. Finally, I thought if I could do some research, maybe it would put my mind at ease. It didn't. I discovered that supposedly a man brutally killed his girlfriend at the hotel. I feel that if this is true, I may have felt the man's presence and dreamt from the woman's perspective of the day she got murdered. When my boyfriend woke me up, I was fighting for my life and I feared him just as the woman feared her boyfriend.
Huh.
The nightmare never reoccurred, thank goodness, and I never remembered exactly what took place in it. I've had a lot of paranormal experiences in my life, but this one scared me so badly, I do not know if I could ever go back. Even pictures of the hotel cause me anxiety to this day.
Jeez.
It took me years to even be able to tell my husband exactly what happened that night, and even longer to tell anyone else. I think what freaked me out the most was at the time of the events, I absolutely never thought about self-harm or suicide, and it really bothered me that it seemed like I did that night and relished the idea of my sweet husband finding me afterwards. Whatever this entity is bad news, and I often wonder if anyone else has had any similar experiences or any experiences at all at the Beaumont. I tried researching if anyone has, but I always come up empty. Holy cow.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say. That is rough. Man.
I don't even know if I can say thank you for sharing this because I kind of feel honored that you would even consider sharing this with us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is such a personal and private event. I'm just in awe that you felt comfortable enough writing about it and having us share it. I have found in my life, not necessarily with something like this, but that writing things out can be cathartic.
Yes.
So I hope maybe you found that too. But God,
that has to be the hardest thing that DA has ever done.
Yeah.
Ever experienced ever. I mean, I don't know how it could get any worse than that from an entity, really. That the just with the bathtub thing, while they were in the bathtub, I don't know that it definitely does sound like an entity was like at that point, not necessarily putting them through something they went through, but tormenting them in a way. And we've seen before where people do get driven mad that way.
Right.
And had DA not left and had they stayed multiple nights, something really bad could have happened.
Yeah. And the fact that, that DA has had so many other paranormal experiences that even seeing an apparition seemed commonplace, where that would, that would really frighten most people. It sounds to me like DA is that you're already sensitive, you know, super sensitive.
Yep.
And that you, I think you're on to something, that you are so sensitive that you, instead of seeing something played out in front of you, you became, you know, a character in this horrific event, and you saw it played out through one of through this other woman's perspective, and that is horrifying. And again, it's just a guess, but you know, that's a good one for me to end on. Let's just say that. I mean, that is hard.
That one's a rough one. And yeah, like Matt said, we're honored that you shared it with us. My last one is from HL, a little bit longer one, but it says, this story is about my aunt's home in Yazoo City, Mississippi. The home was owned by a wealthy family for years, but no one lived in it. They sold it to my aunt and my uncle, and they moved in and loved it. My aunt moved into the house about 6 to 7 years ago, and at the time, she had only lived there a few months, but I had never been there. The rest of my family had visited her new house. My grandma, little brother, little sister, and I were going to go to my aunt's so I could see her new home. On the way, we were going to stop to get food, so we called to see who was there. A few of my cousins were there, but they did not want food. I asked if my cousin Eric was there because I knew he would want food, but my aunt responded with no. We got our food and pulled up to my aunt's new house. Once we pulled up to the house, my brother said, "Hey, there's Eric at the front door. He's waving at me." Then my grandma and I looked up and we also saw Eric at the door waving to my brother. Just a side note, my sister never looked up, so she did not see him. Also, one of my aunt's children were backing out of the house in their car, so we looked at them and did not see who Eric went to, or where Eric went to. No one else was wearing a white shirt, and none of my other cousins can be mistakenly identified as Eric. Now, I was upset because we bought food, and we did not bring any for Eric, even though he was at my aunt's house. We went inside and did not see Eric in the kitchen with my aunt and uncle, but my aunt told my siblings to show me around, so I figured we would see him somewhere else in the house. We opened every door in the home and went inside except for one door, a creepy door under the stairs. My brother had been terrified of the door since my aunt moved in, but no one told me until after we left my aunt's. He refused to open it to look inside and even ran past it once we got near.
I get that.
Yep, I've had that. We went back upstairs to my aunt, uncle, and grandma, to where my aunt, uncle, and grandma were sitting, and I several times asked where Eric was, but my aunt was adamant that he was not at her house. My grandma, brother, and I insisted that we saw him in a white shirt waving at us from the open front door. My aunt, uncle were still stuck with their story. My aunt and uncle still stuck with their story. So I called Eric and he told me he was at his mom's house across a busy highway and railroad track. He could not drive at the time and was only about 12 years old. So he told me he was home alone playing his video game and he was not wearing a shirt at all. I was so freaked out, I asked to leave. No other family member believed us, but my brother, grandma, and I have stuck to the same story for about 6 years now. No details have changed, and we all saw the same thing. After this incident, I've only returned to my aunt's house about 4 times. One time, I went to the bathroom, and the toilet sits directly across from the mirror. I was using the restroom and felt such an overwhelming feeling of terror, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I was too scared to look in the mirror. I sat in there looking at the ground until my sister came to check on me. As soon as she knocked on the door and spoke, the feeling of intense terror went away. I looked up and rushed out of the restroom immediately. Then I invited a friend to come over to my aunt's house with me. I never told her what happened to me in the home. She is a very bubbly person, but when we pulled up and went inside, her demeanor immediately changed. She was quiet and refused to interact with anyone. She kept asking me if we could leave. We stayed for about 30 minutes, then left. I asked her if anyone offended her, and she said no. When we pulled up, I saw your cousin, Pale Lynn, at the front door wearing a white dress, and she waved at me. But when we went inside, she wasn't there. I asked your aunt if she was there, and she told me no. She has not been to my house in a few weeks, so I got scared and wanted to leave. I told her the things that happened to me in the house, and she now refuses to go to my aunt's house with me. I discussed the incidents with my grandma, and she told me that one of my cousins fell asleep on the couch one night and woke up screaming because he saw a floating orb in front of his face. Then my aunt was heating up tortillas on the stove, and water started leaking from the microwave. It was so much water, it looked like someone spilled a bowl of water across the stove and the floor. It was not raining, they did not have a leak in the roof, and there was nothing in the microwave. This happened after about 3 years of my aunt and uncle living in their home. After the incidents detailed above, my uncle's mom moved in and was terrified to be alone in the home. She would beg them to stay, and she would cry and plead with them not to leave her alone, but she never said why. She ended up passing away in the home, and a few weeks after she passed away, my cousins saw her walking past the glass sliding doors in the kitchen. They saw her full face, so there was no denying it was her, and she was wearing a white dress. I do not go to my aunt's house anymore. My family doesn't believe in supernatural beings, and I don't know what to believe, but I know I saw something, and I know there is something in their home.
Man. That's kind of weird. It
doppelganger situation.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. But that you're not actually seeing, you know, the spirit of your loved one, that you're seeing something that's mimicking that for whatever reason.
You know,
whether it's to draw you in or maybe to frighten or just playing games with you. Who knows?
I don't know. It's creepy that so many people saw it.
Yeah.
You know it happened.
Yeah.
It's not just a figment of this person's imagination. You know it happened. So it's weird, though, that it's multiple different people.
All seem to be wearing white.
Mm-hmm. All wearing white. And one of them actually did pass away. Mm-hmm. And there's a legend that if you see your doppelganger,
right,
that means you're going to die. So maybe this person did see their doppelganger. That's why they didn't want to be left alone. And then they passed away. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's wild. That's a lot happening at that house.
I'm telling you, man, I tell you what, we've had some really fascinating stories this year.
We have.
And thank you guys so much for sharing these. You know, we enjoy reading these stories. We enjoy sharing these stories with the rest of the graveyard. We only can do this as long as you guys are willing to tell these stories. So
yep.
We appreciate it so much. I mean, this is the eighth time we've done this over the 7 years that we've been doing the show, and you guys do such a fantastic job sending us these stories. So just keep it up. We will continue to do this. It's become a Graveyard Tales tradition. But it is just, it just blows me away every year that, you know, how much you guys contribute.
Yeah. Like Matt said, we couldn't keep this tradition up if it wasn't for y'all sending in the stories, and it means a lot to us that you like us, like the show enough, or feel comfortable with us enough to share your stories with us. And if you missed sending it in this year, you can send it anytime throughout the year, as long as you put listener stories, and it will get saved in a folder for the next listener stories episode we do. So if you say, man, I just started listening to y'all, found this, I have a story, when can I send it? Send it anytime. Yeah, just put listener stories, and we will save it, and we will read it on the next listener stories episode. Thank you so much for everybody who has sent in stories and have listened to us for whenever you found us. Thank you.
Yeah.
And for joining the graveyard. And I don't know how else to say thank you.
I know. Thanks, you guys. Until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.